Good afternoon, friends and colleagues. At the outset, I would like to thank Evelina and the organizers for the kind invitation. Kindly bear with me for my inability to join you in person due to a competing engagement. On the other hand, I am quite pleased that we can interact by means of a video presentation recorded in Lyon. What I would like to do in the next 25 minutes is to briefly review on the current status of cervical cancer prevention, particularly in low and medium resource countries, and based on findings from research studies as well as ongoing national programs, what one can do to improve cervical cancer prevention services in low and medium resource countries. As you are all aware, cervical cancer can be controlled by three specific activities. One is vaccination, HPV vaccination. We all know now that cervical cancer is caused by persistent infection with one of the high-risk, 15 high-risk HPV types, of which HPV 16 and 18 are responsible for 70 to 75% of cervical cancers across the world. So currently, vaccines are available which can prevent HPV 16 and 18 infection. So this is one of the very exciting developments in cervical cancer prevention. Screening linked with treatment is a time-tested method which has contributed to enormous success in controlling cervical cancers in many developed countries. And this is a vast potential which is yet unrealized in many low and medium resource countries. And finally, one can diagnose symptomatic invasive cancer quite early by means of early clinical diagnosis, and you can cure a vast proportion of early invasive cancers with radical surgery and radiotherapy. So that is the third method of controlling cervical cancer. But of course, the most cost-effective means of controlling cervical cancer is by prevention, either by HPV vaccination eventually, and by screening using one of the most feasible and effective methods. First, let us consider about HPV vaccine. As I said already, there are HPV vaccines available, two vaccines currently targeted, HPV 16 and 18, among the 15 high-risk oncogenic types. And these vaccines have been tried extensively in clinical trials, and now they are marketed in more than 120 countries. And about 23 developed countries have introduced this as part of their public health immunization programs. The research findings indicate these vaccines are highly successful in inducing antibodies against, neutralizing antibodies against HPV 16 and 18, 100% seroconversion. And the seropositivity remains in more than 98% of the people who have been vaccinated at 6 years, because now the follow-up, the maximum follow-up that we have is between 6 and 7 years. And the HPV antibody titers induced by vaccination are several-fold higher than natural infection. And these vaccines provide 100% protection against CAN2 and 3 lesions caused by HPV 16 and 18 for at least 6 years in HPV naive populations. That means people who have never been infected with HPV when they were vaccinated. And there is some evidence emerging for cross protection against CAN2 to 3 caused by related HPV types such as HPV 45 and 31. And vaccine-induced antibody levels maintained over 6 years for both the vaccines. And there is robust recall response by means of a recall booster dose for the quadrivalent vaccine. And again, more than, say, 50 million doses have been administered across the world. And both in research studies as well as in routine programs, the vaccines has been proved to be very safe and well-tolerated. And I would say it is as safe as a tetanus toxoid. HPV vaccination, there is a lot of promise behind it. And there are high expectations, but there are several challenges. It's a vaccine which is targeting adolescents. one need to give currently three doses, day 1, day 60, 180, or day 1, day 30, or day 190, depending upon which vaccine you use. And the vaccine is currently expensive. In the private market, it is sold for $60 to $300 per dose. It is quite expensive. And so there are several challenges in getting the HPV vaccination administered through the health services in public health programs. But on the other hand, I mean, any vaccine, when it is marketed initially, are quite expensive. And as the demand increases, as there are more manufacturers and more competition, and eventually the cost will come down. There will be new technologies. There will be polyvalent vaccines available in future. There will be L2-based vaccines, which do not require a cold chain for maintenance. And manufacturers from countries like China, India, Brazil will eventually follow the band of manufacturers. So eventually, I think some of these challenges in terms of cost and affordability can be tackled. But still, since it is an adolescent vaccine, you need a vaccine platform which is suitable for covering a large proportion of the adolescent population. And again, there are several other aspects to make the vaccine more affordable, whether we can get away with suboptimal doses of vaccine. For example, can we get away with a shortened regime, less than three doses, whether a two dose can be as effective as three doses or a single dose even. And then for logistic purposes, when we are administering in health services, can we use extended dose regimes over a five-year period, four-year period? So there are several interesting aspects which need to be evaluated either in research settings or in routine program settings. And again, as I said already, that the possibilities for cheaper polyvalent vaccines and L2-based vaccines, which can be generic and can cover the entire range of high-risk HPV infections, are quite possible in future. In order to test whether suboptimal doses are as good as three doses of HPV vaccination, there's a large randomized trial ongoing in India, which is evaluating two doses of vaccine versus three doses of vaccine with a long-term follow-up, which will also include outcomes such as incidence of high-grade CIN as well as cervical cancer incidence. It will be very interesting to have some results from this study that can accelerate public health policies in countries. Now, coming to cervical cancer screening. The most time-tested screening method is conventional cytology or pap smear. Then there are several alternatives to cytology now. On the high technology side, you have HPV testing, HPV DNA testing. And then on the lower technology side, we have naked eye visual inspection after application of 3 to 5% acetic acid, what we call as VIA, or Lugol's iodine, what we call as VLE. And a high sensitivity is an important requirement for early detection of cervical cancer in low-resource settings. Cervical cytology, if properly done, it has a satisfactory performance in detecting high-grade cervical precancerous lesions. But it has been shown that introducing a quality-assured, high-quality cytology with a high accuracy can be very challenging and highly resource-intensive. For example, in a cross-sectional study in India involving five major pathology laboratories in the country, which deal with more than 15,000 cervical smears annually, the sensitivity for cytology in these quality-assured laboratories varied from 38% to around 81% in detecting high-grade disease, which shows the high variability across the laboratories. And the variability in specificity was between 86% to 98%. Liquid-based cytology is a technological improvement over that of pap smear in that it results in a unit of thin layer of cells without debris, so that reading is much more easier. But it is not. We are not sure whether the performance in terms of improvements in accuracy is similar to that of pap smear. Or in other words, most of the studies show if a carefully done pap smear has the same performance as liquid-based cytology. The advantage of visual screening is immediate results. And It can be repeated many number of times, real time, with real time results. So it allows linking diagnosis and treatment in the same session as screening. That's a major advantage of visual screening. But the problem is, it is a subjective test, so there is quite a bit of variation in performance between providers and among providers. Essentially, the visual tests rely on clinical detection of acetovoid lesions in the transformation zone, touching the squamocolumnar junction, or all around the os, or on the entire cervix, or on cervical growth after application of acetic acid. So an acetovoid lesion in the transformation zone indicates a positive test. And after application of Lugol's iodine, a detection of a mustard yellow lesions in the transformation zone is indicative of a positive Willey test. Pragmatically, one could use both the visual tests at the same time. One could apply acetic acid first and detect the acetovoid lesion, and then if the acetovoid lesion is present, then apply Lugol's iodine, and if the lesion turns mustard yellow, I think the predictive value, the positive predictive value of such a test outcome is quite high. Then coming to HPV testing, it's the most objective of all screening tests, cervical screening tests. It is robust, it is highly reproducible because it is mechanically measured. But the problem is, currently it is an expensive test. It costs anywhere between $30 to $80 in different healthcare settings, and it requires a laboratory infrastructure, equipment, trained technicians, and the processing of the currently available, commercially available HPV tests varies between, say, 4 to 6 hours. So it is quite resource and technology intensive. And there are different HPV testing methods available. The most widely commercially available method is hybrid capture 2 based on signal amplified nucleic acid assay. Thanks to funding from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, there is a possibility of a rapid, affordable, cheaper HPV test called Care HPV test commercially available in the near future, which is expected to cost less than $5 per test, and it will take about 2 hours for processing and for the results. And a vast range of providers like ordinary nurses and health workers can be trained in using in doing the Care HPV testing. And on the technology intensive side, there are target amplified techniques such as PCR and tests for E6 and E7 oncogenes, which are still experimental. But the most important aspect in screening is the link between screening, diagnosis, and treatment. Unless the screen positive women are provided with diagnostic investigations and or treatment, screening is not effective in reducing cervical cancer burden. So in order to improve these links, several alternative programmatic approaches have been proposed, and one of these is reduced frequency of screening. At least try to provide a single good quality screen between the ages of, let us say, like 30 and 49, 30 and 59, or 35 and 49, or once in 10 years if resources allow. So reduced frequency of screening with good quality testing cover a large proportion of people. And the second programmatic approach, paradigm change, is linking screening and treatment in the same session as screening, what we call as a single visit approach. So immediately after screening, you have diagnostic triage investigations such as colposcopy, directed biopsies, and then based on colposcopic findings, treat the lesion either with ablative techniques or excisional techniques, accepting over-treatment. This is feasible in places there is some capacity for colposcopy and histology. But we should be aware there are several countries in the world where there is no capacity for histopathology and colposcopy. In such places, treat the screen-positive women with ablative techniques such as cryotherapy or cold coagulation, provided the lesions are occupying less than 3/4 of the transformation zone and there is no clinical evidence of invasive cancer. And such programmatic aspects have been, new approaches have been tested in research studies, in India, in Thailand, in South Africa, in Ghana, and several other African countries, and have been shown to be acceptable to the population and safe. So, the screen and treat following VIA or HPV testing. Treat the screen-positive women with immediate cryotherapy, provided they have lesions involving less than 3/4 of the transformation zone, and the lesion is not going into the canal. It is totally ectocervical, and there is no clinical evidence of cancer. And studies have shown such an approach can cure CIN in a vast majority of people, provided the screening technique is accurate. And it can prevent future HPV infections and prevent future CIN and cancer by ablating transformation zone and reducing ectopy. And there is no data currently to indicate that cryotherapy and cold coagulation of women without CIN is harmful. And in fact, overtreatment may prove beneficial to a proportion of women. I would like to discuss findings from three important randomized trials conducted in developing countries, which are very important to evolve future practical algorithms for cervical cancer screening. The first study I'm going to refer is the so-called Cape Town study, a randomized trial involving about 6,500 women. All of them had visual inspection with acetic acid, VIA, and HPV testing by hybrid capture 2. And then the women were randomized into three groups of approximately 2,200 women in each of the groups. In group 1, if VIA was positive, women were treated with cryotherapy. In group 2, if women were positive on HPV testing, they were treated with cryotherapy. And in group 3 was the control group, a delayed evaluation group. No treatment was offered immediately. Then all the 6,555 women were invited at 6 months to come for a repeat colposcopic evaluation and directed biopsies, which was done blindly without the providers knowing to which group the woman belonged. And they counted the number of CIN 2 and 3 lesions in each of the groups. And then these women called back at 12 months, 24 months, and 36 months. And they went on counting the number of precancerous lesions in each of the groups. Now, look at the results. In the group who received screen and treat following a positive HPV screen, at 36 months, there was a 73% protection against CIN 2 to 3 disease. In this group, there were only 29 CIN 2 to 3 lesions cumulatively by 36 months. In the second group, where women received cryotherapy following a positive VIA screen, the cumulative frequency of CIN 2 to 3 lesions at 36 months was 71 cases. And the delayed evaluation group during the same period, there was 105 women with such lesions. So, the HPV screen and treat reduced the prevalence of CIN 2 to 3 lesions by 73% as compared to the control group. The VIA screen and treat reduced the prevalence of CIN 2 to 3 lesions, the cumulative frequency of 2 to 3 lesions, by 32% as compared to the control group, indicating that HPV testing is a more accurate test identifying women with precancerous lesions, inducing a higher cure rate. And this shows schematically, diagrammatically, this was the case for CIN grade 1 or worse lesions, CIN 2 or worse lesions, or CIN 3 or worse lesions. HPV testing was the most accurate approach in reducing, in detecting and reducing the frequency of high-grade lesions. Now, if you take the high-risk group of HIV-positive women in the same study, a HPV screen and treat policy reduced the cumulative frequency of CIN 2 to 3 lesions by 80% as compared to the delayed evaluation control group. And a VIA screen policy reduced the cumulative frequency of CIN 2 to 3 lesions among HIV positive women by 50% as compared to the control group, again indicating HPV testing is a more accurate and effective cervical cancer screening approach. And another important piece of information coming from the Cape Town study is the see and treat approach actually resulted in considerable prevention of future HPV infections as compared to the group of women received no cryotherapy. So look here. Among approximately 270 women who were HPV negative at baseline but received cryotherapy, 11% of the women developed HPV infections by 36 months. As compared to the no cryotherapy group, among 269 women, about 59 women developed HPV infections. So the cumulative frequency of HPV infections in those who received cryotherapy was 50% lower as compared to the control group. At the moment, there are several countries which are implementing VI treat programs. In Africa, there are large demonstration programs in several countries now, in Latin America and Guatemala. In the Asian region, Thailand has a national program in 30 provinces where a screen and treat policy is currently being implemented. Almost around a million women have been screened by a VIA screen and treat policy in Thailand so far. And the results indicate about 8 to 10% of the women are VIA positive, and 80 to 90% of the VIA positive women receive cryotherapy on site with a very high safety value. And it will be very interesting to show how the cervical cancer incidence decline in these provinces in future. A second study I would like to refer is the randomized trial from India, a large randomized trial which evaluated a single round of VIA screening in reducing cervical cancer incidence and mortality. This study involved around 80,000 women. 50,000 women were invited for a single round of VIA screening, and if they were positive, nurses provided colposcopy-directed biopsies and treated lesions with cryotherapy, and large lesions were treated by excisions by cancer-directed treatment. Then the control group received the existing care, which is no screening but health education. 7 years from the beginning of screening, there was a 25% reduction in cervical cancer incidence and a 35% reduction in cervical cancer mortality in the group of women who were invited for VIA screening as compared to the control group. And in fact, the protection was almost entirely restricted to women in the premenopausal age group. This is one of the major limitations of VIA. The transformation zone has to be visible for VIA to be accurate. So in older women, in postmenopausal women, the transformation zone moves into the canal. So it is an unsatisfactory test among postmenopausal women. The third randomized trial I would like to refer to is a randomized trial from Maharashtra in India, which compared a single round of screening with HPV testing using hybrid capture 2 or a single round of screening with a quality assured conventional cytology, or a single round of screening, visual screening provided by nurses, as compared to a control group receiving usual care. And this study involved around 132,000 women, approximately 33,000 women in each of the groups. And screen-positive women received colposcopy-directed biopsies, treatment of precancerous lesions with cryotherapy and LEAP, and suspected cancers for diagnosis and treatment. About 79% of the invited women participated in screening. More than 80% of the screen-positive women received diagnosis and treatment. And the women were systematically followed up. The results indicate 8 years from the beginning of screening, there was a 50% reduction in cervical cancer mortality in the group of women who were invited for HPV testing. The reduction in mortality in cytology and the VIA groups were similar but did not reach statistical significance, again indicating HPV testing probably identifies biologically significant with a high potential for malignant transformation. Those lesions, you know, the precancerous lesions are there with a high biological potential for malignant transformation, so that it ultimately reduces both the incidence of advanced disease and death from cervical cancer as compared to cytology and visual screening. The women are being kept under long-term follow-up. It will be interesting to see with a long-term follow-up if protection emerges in cytology and VIA groups. But another important piece of information which further strengthens the evidence for HPV testing is the high negative predictive value. Among the 25,000 HPV negative women, 8 women developed cervical cancers over 8-year follow-up period, as compared to 22 women among the 24,000 cytology negative women and 25 women among the 23,000 VAA negative women, indicating that probably HPV testing was accurate in identifying all those with precancers and preventing them progressing to invasive cancer. And it correctly identified a large number of people with no disease. So this is again a very important piece of evidence. But as we said earlier, the real problem with HPV testing is its affordability. The current techniques are cumbersome and expensive and resource intensive and technology intensive. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, we are very, very lucky that the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation supported many of the studies that I described earlier. And in fact, they invested more than $100 million in several cervical cancer screening studies and vaccination studies to show the way for controlling cervical cancer in different resource settings. They also supported an important study to develop an affordable HPV test for use in developing countries. So such a test has been developed, which is called CARE HPV test, which is currently undergoing you know, the earlier processes for marketing. We expect this test to be available by early next year, and is expected to cost less than $5. It is called CARE HPV test. It will be manufactured in China and marketed. And a cross-sectional study by Dr. Yulin Chow and colleagues in China indicated CARE HPV has the same performance characteristics as that of hybrid capture 2 or a high-quality liquid-based cytology. So this is very encouraging. So all these developments have led to new algorithms for cervical cancer screening. They all point out to the use of HPV testing as a primary screening test. In high-resource settings, a primary HPV testing can be followed by triage by pap smear or by liquid-based cytology. And in such settings, for example, in most of the high-income countries, assuming that 8 to 10% of the women will be positive for HPV testing. And I would like to remind you here, HPV testing should be used only in women above the age of 30 years. If you use in young women, a lot of women have transient infections. So the false positive rates will be very high and we'll be unnecessarily investigating a large number of people. So the test should be applied for women above the age of 30 years. So in a high resource setting, women above the age of 30 years subjected for primary HPV testing will result in 8 to 10% of the women being positive. So such women are subjected to reflex testing by cytology, and those who are positive, like ASCUS plus on cytology, would be subjected for further diagnostic investigations. In such a setting, the pap smear performance will be very high because HPV positive women represent a group of women at high risk for cervical neoplasia, the high prevalence of cervical neoplasia. And again, in future, as HPV vaccination becomes more prevalent, the prevalence of lesions in the general populations will go down. And a test like cervical cytology will have very low specificity, at the same time very low accuracy as well. So HPV testing will be more objective in such a scenario. In low resource settings, a primary HPV testing can be followed by VAA and VILI triage and a treatment with cryotherapy or cold coagulation. There are a large number of field studies in developing countries where cryotherapy has been administered by nurses in field settings and have been shown to be effective, cures more than 90% of cervical precancerous lesions, and it has the same efficacy as that of cryotherapy provided by doctors in controlled hospital settings and has been shown to be safe and acceptable to women. And finally, all these findings, summarizing these findings, would show the roadmap for cervical cancer prevention in low and medium resource countries is that one should aim to vaccinate girls aged 9 to 13 years with HPV vaccination. Let us hope the vaccine becomes affordable in the near future. And to begin with, provide a single HPV screen at ages 35 and 39. And if resources permit, HPV screening can be repeated at 10-year intervals. So such a philosophy of combining HPV vaccination as well as HPV testing as a screening approach is likely to prevent a vast majority, in principle, say more than 90-95% of the lesions, which can even bring the prospects of cervical cancer prevention to an almost an eradication of cervical cancer in the long term. Thank you for your kind attention.